Hello and welcome to another episode of Hanks a Lot, the comprehensive and encyclopedic podcast examining chronologically the many films of Mr. Tom Hanks. I'm your host, Kent Shelton, and joining me from Hollywood, California is our film critic at large, Mr. Trace Oakley. Hello, Trace.
Good evening, Kent. I always say good evening, and then I remember just after the words come out of my mouth that we drop on Saturday mornings. Saturday morning to you, sir.
The miracle of podcasting is people can listen to it whenever they want. So, and from Seattle, Washington, the city that gave us such great inventions as evaporated milk and pickleball, our musical director, the supersonic Mr. Kevin Dennis. Hello, how are things in the home of pickleball?
I'm enjoying a nice frosty glass of pickle right now with ball on the side.
Very good. Well, folks, now's that magic time that you look forward to every week where we dig into the old kit bag of Tom Hanks movies and pull out the next wriggling example and drag it under the microscope and poke it and prod it and see what it's all about. And we've come to that point in Tom Hanks's career where we have to talk about the Da Vinci Code. That's right. It was a famous book by Dan Brown that you probably saw for sale in an airport. Your mom liked it. She read it at her book club or something. It was all the rage. It was like hoop skirts or fidget spinners for a while there. It was all Da Vinci Code. It's all anybody could talk about. And so, naturally, it had to become a movie. And if you're making a movie, why not put Tom Hanks in it? Even if he had a really terrible haircut at the time and couldn't do anything about it. So, I think before we start our roundtable discussion of the Da Vinci Code, it's probably time to hear a little jingle and maybe a review.
Well, now it's time for the review. Trace, please tell us, what is your view?
You have just learned you are the last living descendant of Jesus Christ. What are you going to do now? Go to Disneyland? Feed the starving masses? Bring about world peace? How about have a serious chat with a movie character played by Tom Hanks? Only he can lend sage advice to the last living descendant of Jesus Christ about how to conduct herself now that she is the last living descendant of Jesus Christ. The 2006 film The Da Vinci Code is based on the 2003 Dan Brown novel of the same name. The novel was more than just a bestseller that everyone else was reading. The book made us think about the fact that everyone else was reading it. The story begins with a grisly murder after hours in the Louvre. Its curator, Jacques Sonnier, encounters an albino monk who demands information leading to the location and planned destruction of the Holy Grail. Sonnier gives the monk bad information, and the monk gives Sonnier a bullet. The body is posed, and the body is covered with secret messages. A nationally known symbologist, Robert Langdon, already in Paris for a lecture, is called to the scene and soon finds himself as the prime suspect. A police captain, acting on tips from a member of the culty Catholic sect Opus Dei, believes Langdon is the perp. Sophie Nouveau, a police cryptographer and granddaughter of the decedent, shows up and suspects Langdon is being set up. She throws away a tracking device the cops planted on him, and the two manage to escape. As is often the case, when a person is wrongly accused of a crime, the only way out is to discover the location of an elusive religious artifact. And so, Sophie and Robert set out on a treasure hunt, seeking clues in the works of Leonardo da Vinci, crucial discoveries in the grandfather's safe deposit box, and paying a visit to Langdon's old friend and mentor, Sir Lee Teabing, an expert on all things Holy Grail. The old man's ideas and theories are not every Grail buff's cup of, well, he doesn't think it's even a cup. Teabing asserts that Mary Magdalene was not a whore, but rather the wife of Jesus Christ and preggers during the crucifixion. The slain man's organization, the Priory of Sion, was created to protect their descendants, while Opus Dei wished to destroy the Grail to protect the Vatican and pretty much the whole Catholic Church. So Teabing claims the Holy Grail is actually Mary Magdalene herself. No cup, no holy water, no refills. By this point in the story, Robert and Sophie are not only pursued by the police, but also by the volatile albino, who kills anyone in his way, including mild-mannered nuns. Many twists and turns ensue, and Sophie eventually learns via documents uncovered by Langdon that Sonir was not actually her grandfather, but was instead her protector. Then Tom Hanks cuts himself shaving, and the blood in the sink reminds him of where Mary Magdalene's sarcophagus, Holy Grail 2.0, must be. One of the hallmarks of a good thriller is that nothing is as it seems, and often no one is as they seem. The most surprising thing that's revealed in The Da Vinci Code isn't a twist or turn in the story. It's that this film is a genuinely effective and enjoyable thriller. Is it ridiculous? Yes. Is it overhyped? For sure. Does it take itself too seriously? Laughably so. Is it fun and immensely watchable? Yes, it is. The film and its source material set out to be both entertaining, smart, and important. The film version fails at smart and important, but succeeds in being an engaging, surprising crime caper slash treasure hunt and mystery. The book was controversial. Decried by the Catholic Church, banned in some countries, embraced by others for a perceived anti-religious bent, the film sparked similar controversy, leading director Ron Howard and stars Tom Hanks and Ian McKellen to issue statements on where they stood regarding the story. Critics have charged that the book, and by extension the film, are full of historical inaccuracies. This, along with the perceived religious and dogmatic taboos posited in the story, will prevent many from enjoying this tale for what it really is. In fairness, if this story had been told by, say, Robert Zemeckis or Mel Gibson, the thriller and mystery would have taken a back seat to proselytizing, and the protagonist would have been antagonist, and I might have hated it. That said, Ron Howard's take on the story is extremely self-important, takes itself way too seriously, and gets bogged down with ancient religious jargon. But the sincerity and earnestness with which this ludicrous story is told is part of what makes it so fun. The last 20 minutes or so of the film are truly awful. There's the somber conversation where Sophie realizes half the Beatles are dead, so Tom Hanks probably is more popular than the first century religious leader slash carpenter she's related to, and thus she should take his advice. There's the shaving scene, and a general approach where everything is overblown so we realize how important it all was. Hanks is solid as Langford. This is a role where he could have fallen back on his sardonic know-it-all persona, but he gives a restrained and effective performance. Audrey Tautou, best known for Amelie, is terrific as Sophie. Ian McKellen has the showiest role as T-Bing, the unhinged Grail aficionado. He's an absolute delight and completely believable, even when his character's actions are not. Jürgen Prochnow now plays a seemingly insignificant character brilliantly through to its surprising turn. The one performance that doesn't work is Alfred Molina's hammy and over-the-top turn as a fanatical bishop. He seems to be commenting on the silliness of the whole venture. I didn't expect to like this film at all. Maybe I cracked a code that Dan Brown and Ron Howard didn't want cracked. Go in thinking it's all hooey, and you are liable to have a good time. My score? 3 shroud-like hankies.
Well, very good. Look at that.
Kevin, how about that?
Every now
the
and
old
then,
codger liked one.
Every now and then, Trace likes one. Hey, Mikey, what is that cereal you're eating? Is that life? I got to try that.
I survived a good review.
I want to tell you, I want to say, first of all, I am outraged and troubled by two things in this movie. First of all, how dare anyone imply that the Catholic Church is capable of a conspiracy of any sort.
Or a cover-up of any
kind. Yeah, any kind of a cover-up or a sin of omission. Heaven forfend that someone would accuse the Catholic Church of ever doing anything untoward and covering anything up. And secondly, and more disturbingly, what the hell's going on between Ron and Clint Howard? This is the first Ron Howard movie that Clint Howard, his brother, has not had a cameo in.
I enjoyed this movie so much I did not notice that.
There are a million small parts, one-line parts, so many chances that, you know, and do you think Clint was like, Ron, I've never been to Paris. That might be kind of fun to go to Paris, bro. Yeah, and for some reason, he is nowhere in the cast of this first Ron Howard film ever. And I don't know if the father of Ron Howard, if Rance power. Did he show up somewhere in here? He usually.
I get the feeling that there's probably a lot of footage that ended up on the cutting room floor, and maybe the Howards ended up there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I'll tell you this. It is, as thrillers go, it is it moves along at a nice pace. It's got a lot of great locations, kind of like a Bond film. It moves quickly. There's a couple of great chase scenes. I thought that the driving the ridiculous little French car in
reverse. That was an amazing car chase. That's one of the best car chases I've ever seen.
It was a lot of fun. The story, I agree with you, is goofy and over the top. And I love in these sort of wrongly accused thrillers where nobody ever gets to have a full conversation. Jean Reno brings him into as an expert on symbology, and then almost immediately just tries to throw him in irons and put him in the Bastille for the rest of his life without ever saying, like, where were you an hour ago? Or saying, like, do you have an alibi? Did you have any reason to want to kill this guy? Now, I thought that some of the supporting cast, and especially you mentioned Ian McKellen, was
he's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Just over the top, and it's sort of an insult to his countrymen that his name was basically like Lord Teabag, and he is this fancy pants lord living in his mansion.
I think I read somewhere that the name of that character was what do you call it? Different word with the same letters, an anagram.
Yeah, it was an anagram
of someone that Dan Brown had some sort of legal issue with.
Yeah, what my understanding is that there were two actual British scholars who've built their whole career studying the Holy Grail, and he took their two names and kind of mashed them together in a portmanteau and made that guy. And then both of those Grail scholars sued the production and the author unsuccessfully. He was like, I don't know. I didn't name Lord Teabag after you, Lord Lord Lipton. Kevin, had you ever seen this movie before? Had you dipped into the Da Vinci Code before this Odyssey?
I read the book first, and then when it came out, everybody was hyping about it. I read it, and I thought the book was really, I mean, it is the absolute greatest, like, fun Pulp Fiction, just fun book to read. It's a really fun book to read. You absolutely can't take it too seriously, but it's super fun. And I still remember it, how much fun it was. I recommend the book to anybody. It was just a fun ride. The movie I did see before, and I was really disappointed in the movie. I thought that the flagellating priest was overdone. That was unnecessarily graphic.
The one truly false note, which is hard to say because in a movie that's kind of all false notes, but that's sort of what makes it fun. But Alfred Molina, that performance was like he was in a different film.
He was really good. Yeah. I mean, and I thought he was a great actor and all that, but it was overkill. And I agree. I thought the priest was funny I thought that was overdone too. The cardinal guy or bishop or whoever. But I mean, it was fun. It was mostly fun. I like Audrey. She's fun to watch in just about anything. And I agree with your performance of Tom Hanks, but I was a little bored.
I will say this about a thriller, and this is something that happens a lot nowadays, but didn't really happen a lot in the era that this film came out. It felt padded, and it felt at least 30 minutes too long. I do feel like it could have been a little bit tighter, because you're right, there are some times when you just sort of spiral off into a lot of, I don't know, these historical cul-de-sacs of them showing you, documents, and then they fade into footage and fade into newsreel, and it just you're kind of like, okay, with the phony baloney history lesson. Let's get back to the car chases and running from albinos.
That aspect of didn't bother me. It is a fairly long movie. It's about 2.5 hours long, but it really just raced by for me, except you know, that last 20 minutes or so, when it kind of sort of almost clears its throat and says, okay, now we're going to be serious.
Yeah.
And yeah. The last 20 minutes, it's just utterly ridiculous. I mean, it goes into almost Ed Wood kind of territory. I would say it's over long in the sense they could have lopped off that last 20 minutes or so. But before that, it didn't feel padded to me.
I was amazed at the book has got a lot of stuff in it that I can see where it's so well presented and so well presented that I can see where really devout or really committed or I don't know the word conservative Christians could be really upset about talking like that. But the movie I found to be, I can see why somebody might get a little upset about it. But quite frankly, it's so obviously, in my opinion, a movie, like a movie, that I don't know how, I think it'd be kind of hard to get upset about some of the stuff they talk about. And I love this. I love the scene where T-Bing was talking about going on about something that was a fact about Mary Magdalene. And Hanks's character interrupts him with like, come on, that's speculation. That's not even, and I'm sitting there going, that's the right answer at that moment in the film to defuse everybody. And so I don't know. I didn't find it.
I found it hard
to be offended by this movie, even if you're a devout Christian. I understand why some of the people got upset with Life of Brian, but again, even if you know what that's about, there's nothing in it that's offensive at all. So it's I don't know, it's kind of odd.
I think because Life of Brian, while a lot of people were offended by that, it is a comedy, and this is ostensibly a drama, a mystery.
A drama, sure,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying, that the parallels to me are only insofar as it's, to me at least, I was so obviously a story.
Fantastical story, exactly.
Yeah.
The book, I understand that I think the book would work. It works a little bit better because it is a thriller and sort of a fake historical thriller, full of like enough recognizable fact, like, you know, everybody knows what the painting of the Last Supper looks like, or and so it works pretty well. But when you make that book into essentially a thriller that's verging on being an action movie, then you really all of a sudden have to have capital letter good guys and bad guys. And for all intents and purposes, the way this movie unfolds, the Catholic Church are the Nazis. and Tom Hanks is Indiana Jones, and he's the daring archaeologist trying to find the truth, and they, the Catholic Church, are just the bad guys. And I think the book was a little bit more nuanced than that. I think that they're like,
well, it was
the Catholic Church just trying to preserve, you know, 2,000 years of tradition within the church, they're trying to keep the boat from being rocked and blowing everybody's minds with, you know, you can't just put out a new edition of the Bible tomorrow and say, oh, by the way, there's a new ending. So, I think it works better as a book than it does as a movie, but at the same time, you know, it was a fun ride. And then occasionally it was a boring ride. I do think that sometimes when they got into explaining the Grail and Mary Magdalene and Leonardo da Vinci and the clues, I think occasionally the film started to feel like a PowerPoint presentation, where you're seeing slides and close-ups.
Well, I liked that part.
I liked that part too. I did too.
I didn't like was the, I got tired of the book. I never got tired of the action scenes because just about the time you're interested in whatever they're talking about, that's sort of intellectual, somebody's shooting at them and you're like, what, how did we get here? And in the movie, it just kind of felt tedious. It was like, oh, now we're going to do this shooting thing again, or run around, or, and now we're going to talk slowly again. And so it was the slow parts, like Trace was talking about, I agree, were compelling, but they didn't transition well into the action parts for me.
Well, I wasn't wild about watching the albino spank himself so much.
Yeah, that was good.
I wish they would have cut that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, how about the musical score of this film?
Well, it's Hans Zimmer, so there's not much to say. It's Hans Zimmer to me is always very sort of low key, it's background emotional sort of stuff, which, again, to his credit, I felt fit the film I really haven't heard of the only Hans Zimmer film that I've ever seen that the music was distracting for me was Interstellar. So this movie, I found it perfect because it was an emotion that was behind the scene of everything. As far as soundtracks, there wasn't much to say. There was just a couple little Dan Brown performed Fiano, Phiano in it, which was nothing. Dan, I don't mean to say nothing. I appreciate your efforts, but I didn't notice it.
Very good. Well, I think that's about where we're going to land on the Da Vinci Code. So if you decide whether or not to watch these movies based completely on the hanky ratings, I would say you've got a surefire hit on your hands this week, wow. Folks. Why don't you listen to this?
As I said, I really, this was not one I was expecting to like. This is kind of a question of on what level will I not like it? I mean, not only did I really enjoy it, this is one I would actually happily watch again.
Wow. That's 3 hankies out of 100. Well done.
I got good news for you, Trace.
There's more coming.
A couple movies down the pipe, we've got the sequel. There's a sequel.
Oh, we do, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
A sequel to this film is coming up in the history of Mr. Tom Hanks.
Oh, all right.
But before we get to that, we're going to have to get to next week's movie, which is we're going to slide right past the Simpsons movie and go straight into Charlie Wilson's War next week. Before we leave you, I hope that you guys have enjoyed our show today. I hope you've enjoyed Kevin's keyboard noises, which is the loudest thing that was on the show.
Oh, was
today.
That? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Much louder than any of our conversation.
Oh, sorry, guys.
But we're going to leave you. Speaking of Kevin on the keyboards, we're going to leave you with a little song composed by our own Kevin. On the keyboards.
Oh, boy.
Thank you guys so much. Enjoy your song. And until next week, thanks a lot.
Murder, murder, murder in a scary museum with a scary white monk who likes to whip his skin. Running, running, running all over the place, interpreting symbols and Mona Lisa's face. Now we have to stop the plot and hear a short lecture. How to discern the Last Supper painting in medieval architecture. To the running and political priests with power plays and a puzzle box release. Princess Sophie gets an armored truck lift. Roseline Meridian leads to a gift. Powerful Priory and Templar destruction. Sophie's bloodline is the Savior's transduction. Amen.
Well, you made it through another episode of Hanks a Lot, the Tom Hanks podcast. Our show is recorded and mastered at Cliffside Studios in Spokane, Washington. Your hosts are Trace Oakley, Kevin Dennis, and me, Kent Shelton. Please send corrections, comments, and indecent proposals to hankspodcast@gmail.com. Tom Hanks has not been consulted or compensated and knows nothing about what goes on here. All music used on the show is composed and performed by our own Mr. Kevin Dennis. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. Come back next week and bring your sister. And please rate and review us on your favorite podcast catcher. Thanks for the support, and goodbye.